Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ira Melman reporting the killers in a California mass murder have been identified. The question now is why? U.S. authorities are trying to determine why a man and a woman in their 20s opened fire on a holiday gathering at a social services agency in San Bernardino, California yesterday, killing 14 people and wounding 17 others. The rampage allegedly carried out by Syed Farouk and Tashfin Malik ended in a gun battle with police surrounding their vehicle following the chase. Earlier Wednesday, police say Farouk, who works for the local health department, attended a Christmas party at the Inland Regional Center where the shooting took place.
This was a meeting, Christmas party type event that was taking place with Samuel County employees at the Inland Regional Center. Mr. Farouk is a county employee. He works with his title as an environmental specialist in the public health department, has been employed there for 5 years. He was at the party. He did leave the party early under some circumstances that were described as angry or something of that nature. That is the information that we were following up on when we encountered him back near this residence in Redlands, which led to the pursuit and the officer-involved shooting. And as we've now confirmed, he is one of the deceased.
That is the San Bernardino Police Chief Jared Burguan, who said that the shootings were a case of domestic terrorism. The FBI is looking into whether the incident has ties to any international terror network. President Barack Obama told CBS News there are steps that can be taken to make Americans safer, adding that officials at every level of government should come together on a bipartisan basis. This is VOA News. British warplanes have begun carrying out airstrikes in Syria just hours after lawmakers in London approved an expanded strategy to defeat the Islamic State group. Royal Air Force Tornado fighter jets took off from a British air base in Cyprus, struck targets in Syria, and British defense officials said they all returned safely. After 10 hours of debate, British lawmakers Wednesday approved by a vote of 397 to 223 a request from Prime Minister David Cameron to take part in the airstrikes against Islamic State in Syria. U.S. President Barack Obama welcomed the decision, saying Islamic State is a global threat and must be defeated by a global response. In South Africa, the Supreme Court there has convicted double amputee athlete Oscar Pistorius of murder, overturning his earlier conviction of culpable homicide, a less serious charge. A court announced its ruling Thursday in the case against the Olympic star, who was convicted last year of the 2013 shooting death of his girlfriend, Reva Steenkamp. The case now goes back to the trial court for it to determine a new sentence. Southeast Asia needs legal channels of migration to help curb human smuggling. So says the International Organization of Migration at a news conference in Bangkok Thursday, days after it urged efforts to avoid a repeat of this year's disaster when hundreds of refugees were lost at sea or died in jungle camps in Southeast Asia. The IOM Director General is William Lacey. He spoke with reporters.
There probably need to be more legal channels of migration so that we don't end up unintentionally subsidizing the smugglers.
Thousands of migrants from Bangladesh and Myanmar have fled persecution and poverty in recent years, putting their lives in the hands of human smugglers to reach countries with better prospects in Southeast Asia and beyond. Authorities in Switzerland have made a new round of arrests at the request of U.S. authorities in the FIFA corruption scandals, some of them at the same Zurich hotel where the first arrest took place in May. The New York Times first reported Thursday that more than a dozen people were expected to face charges after the latest arrest at the Bar-O-Lac hotel. The Times reported that several of the officials were from South and Central America and were suspected of involvement in racketeering, money laundering, and fraud. The report named Alfredo Hawit of the Honduras, president of CONCACAF, the governing body for soccer in North America, Central and American, the Caribbean, and Juan Angel Napu of Paraguay, president of South American's soccer governing body. I'm Ira Melman, reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
South Africa's top appeals court has overturned a lesser judgment and convicted superstar athlete Oscar Pistorius of murder, agreeing with prosecutors who say he meant to kill when he shot dead his girlfriend.
That's VOA's Anita Powell reporting from Johannesburg. Details coming up also in the news. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has called today for urgent humanitarian aid to countries in West Africa that have fallen victim to Boko Haram attacks. And a top leader of the U.S. Africa Command tells VOA Islamic State militants have expanded their reach in Africa. We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Sierra Leone, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has called today for urgent humanitarian aid to countries in West Africa that have fallen victim to 6 years of armed attacks by the Islamic terror group Boko Haram. Mr. Ban also said the Economic Community of Central African States and the Economic Community of West Africa must immediately hold a summit addressing ways to counter the threat. Since the current insurgency started in 2009, Boko Haram has killed 20,000 and displaced 2.3 million from their homes, mostly in Nigeria. Police officials there have announced increased security against the threat of terror attacks on the capital city, Abuja. Federal Capital Police Chief Wilson Nalingwe announced on Abuja television today that security forces are prepared for a possible attack in the northeastern states. Nalingwe says security has been increased following an alert received that the Boko Haram sect plans to attack churches, mosques, and markets using girls. He offered no detail about the source of the information. Boko Haram's six-year guerrilla campaign to create a caliphate has recently turned to suicide bombings in villages and mosques in three states in the northeast and in neighboring Niger, Chad, and Cameroon. South Africa's top appeals court has overturned a lesser judgment and convicted superstar athlete Oscar Pistorius of murder, agreeing with prosecutors who say he meant to kill when he shot dead his girlfriend. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Before he began his lengthy remarks, South African Judge of Appeal Eric Leach described the case as a human tragedy of Shakespearean proportions. No less dramatic was his final ruling nearly an hour later. In calm, detailed language, he methodically dismantled Judge Thokozile Masipa's original ruling and concluded on behalf of the five-judge panel that Pistorius should have been convicted of murder for his actions that led to the death of his girlfriend on Valentine's Day 2013.
The accused's conviction and sentence on count one are set aside and replaced with the following. Guilty of murder, with the accused having had criminal intent in the form of dolus eventualis. 3, the matter is referred back to the trial court to consider an appropriate sentence afresh in the light of the comments in this judgment.
Pistorius claims he mistook his girlfriend, Reva Steenkamp, for an intruder when he shot 4 times through a locked bathroom door at his Pretoria home, killing her. Prosecutors argued that he meant to kill Steenkamp. Leach says the judges concluded with no doubt that Pistorius foresaw that the person behind the door would die after he pumped 4 bullets into it. This signals what may be the final chapter in a trial that was closely watched around the world. Pistorius's conviction of the lesser charge of culpable homicide, equivalent to the U.S. charge of manslaughter, was largely met with outrage in South Africa. That lesser charge earned him a 5-year sentence. He was released on parole on October 19th after a year of time served. Now he will return to court and receive a new sentence. Pistorius, who was under house arrest as part of his parole conditions, did not attend the ruling Thursday. But Steenkamp's mother, June, who has been a constant presence since the trial began, did. The family has long maintained that the original conviction and sentence were too light. As Leach made his pronouncement, she sat in the front row of the Bloemfontein court, her face unreadable. Anita Pal, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The UN Refugee Agency today calls on Greece and Macedonia to protect refugees and migrants amid growing tensions at Greece's Iodomini border area. Syrian, Afghan, and Iraqi refugees who may enter Macedonia have been blocked by hundreds of migrants from Pakistan and Iran. The migrants have erected barricades of wood, empty barrels, and metal wire to bar the refugees from crossing into Macedonia. In the midst of rock-throwing incidents, Greek police in riot gear are protecting about 2,500 refugees from about 3,000 angry migrants. UNHCR cautions that Balkan countries must consider migrants and refugees based not on their nationality, but on their individual needs for protection. Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban says his government is filing a lawsuit today against EU quotas. Hungary has also launched an aggressive nationwide media campaign claiming that migrants will increase the threat of terrorism. The United States says it will significantly increase the numbers of refugees it accepts from around the world over the next couple of years. While the recent focus has been on Syrian refugees, members of the U.S. African diaspora hope African refugees will also benefit from the pledge. But there is one hurdle that keeps Africans in the U.S. from speaking as one voice. Elizabeth Lee reports from Los Angeles.
On the edge of downtown Los Angeles, a group of people, mainly from the Democratic Republic of Congo, gather at the African First Community Church of Southern California once a week for a little piece of home. About one-third of them arrived in the U.S. as refugees. Camille Tutu, founder of Africa New Day, says applying to the U.S. under refugee status is not an easy process.
Sometimes it's very difficult and it's a very long process. And we never know when you start the process when it's going to actually end up in, the person actually coming to the States.
On this Sunday, Tutu talks to the congregation the work he's been doing to help the Congolese people back home in a country plagued by war and violence.
There are militia groups all over the eastern part of Congo. But again, when I say militia, people don't understand. Let me say there are ISIS all over, and then people will understand. If I say there are Al-Qaeda and Taliban all over, then people will understand. But this has been going on for the past 25 years.
Tutu's homeland is not the only African country in turmoil, says the church's pastor, Kasirika Kasomo.
The whole country is in, continent, I wanted to say, is in big turmoil. So when we are seeing Africans really running for their lives, I don't know why many times the international community closes its eye.
The victims are those who are, who are regular people. You know, they can't work in their country. They have been jailed. They have been tortured.
Ethiopian native Saba Maskal has been a persistent voice for African refugees. She's been helping them navigate life in the U.S. for almost 35 years.
I advocate that African refugees should be given an opportunity to come to the United States.
In 2015, about one-third of all refugees who arrive in the U.S. came from Africa. Talk show host and magazine editor Pamela Anchang, who's originally from Cameroon, hopes more Africans will be able to come as the U.S. increases the numbers of accepted refugees over the next few years.
People are getting killed, getting slaughtered. Even in my own country, in the north, Boko Haram has infiltrated and has caused a lot of havoc. But it just seems to be that the emphasis is more on the European crisis and the Africans are feeling neglected. So I think we as Africans ought to speak up.
Anchang hopes the plight of African refugees will get more attention through her TV shows and magazine about immigrants and the African diaspora. But she says it is not easy for the African diaspora to speak as one voice.
Africans are very tribal in their thinking. We're very regional in our thinking. And so, you know, we've been so divided and conquered back home. So Africans typically don't see themselves in a homogeneous way.
And Chang says in the U.S., it is best to work with one voice, the voice of an African. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
A top leader of the U.S. Africa Command tells VOA Islamic State militants have expanded their reach in Africa. He says they're courting Islamist extremists from Nigeria to Somalia while establishing a major nerve center close to Europe. Michael Franken is the deputy commander for U.S. Africa Command military operations based in Stuttgart, Germany. He says many consider Raqqa, Syria, to be the stronghold of the Islamic State, but he says the militant group has grown to about 2,000 strong in and around the city of Sirte, Libya.
If Raqqa is the nucleus, the nearest thing to the divided nucleus is probably Sirte. And from there, they look to export their terror into Europe and elsewhere. There's talk of them expanding down into Boko Haram, and so that may be to a lesser degree. But Libya is the coin of the realm. Libya needs to fix itself, and we should help where we can.
The terror group has expanded its reach to Somalia, where about 24 al-Shabaab militants switched their allegiance from al-Qaeda to Islamic State last month. Franken says there are about 20-some fighters belonging to ISIS, or Daesh, as it is known in Arabic, in the country today.
In Somalia, the number is insignificant. What has turned out to be very unhealthy is for you as a Shabaab member to declare your allegiance to Daesh, because then your Shabaab brothers now come after you. So that has been kept to a minimum.
The latest developments in East Africa come months after West African terror group Boko Haram pledged allegiance to the Islamic State. Franken says the allegiance has so far failed to lead to substantive cooperation, but he believes that Islamic State has shared some tactics and techniques with the group. One example of this is the increased use of suicide bombers. You were listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Huhib in Washington. Eighteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has called today for urgent humanitarian aid to countries in West Africa that have fallen victim to Boko Haram attacks. South Africa's top appeals court has overturned a lesser judgment and convicted superstar athlete Oscar Pistorius of murder. And a top leader of the U.S. Africa Command tells VOA Islamic State militants have expanded their reach in Africa. And would like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at African News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237. The World Health Organization estimates at least 600 million people a year become ill from eating contaminated food, and at least 420,000 die. The WHO warns, however, those are very conservative estimates. VOA's Jody Capua reports.
The WHO says these are the first ever estimates of the global burden of foodborne diseases, and it readily admits the estimates do not fully capture the true scope of the problem. The study is based on foodborne diseases caused by 31 agents, such as bacteria, viruses, parasites, toxins, and chemicals. But there are more than 200 agents known to cause such illnesses. Despite 10 years of research by more than 100 experts, accurate information is still lacking on most of them, so they're not included in this first report. Dr. Kazuaki Miyagishima is director of the World Health Organization's Department of Food Safety and zoonoses. Zoonoses are diseases that can be transmitted from animals to humans.
Until now, the real magnitude of foodborne diseases and their impact on human health and well-being has been unknown.
He describes the diseases as a ghost that's been invisible. It's often been difficult separating waterborne diseases from foodborne diseases. The symptoms are often similar. Miyagishima says the low estimate of 600 million a year represents 1 in 10 people in the world. Of the more than 400,000 deaths, 125,000 are children, and many are under age 5.
We think that the real magnitude is bigger, but I cannot tell you how much bigger.
The study says diarrheal diseases make up more than half of the global burden of foodborne diseases. They're often caused by eating raw or uncooked meat, eggs, fresh produce, and dairy products contaminated by the norovirus, Campylobacter, non-typhoidal salmonella, and pathogenic E. coli. Other factors are typhoid fever, hepatitis A, tapeworm, and aflatoxin, which is produced by mold on grain that is improperly stored. The risk is greatest in low- and middle-income countries due to unsafe water, poor hygiene, and inadequate conditions for food production and storage. Lower literacy and education rates contribute to the problem. Besides causing diarrhea and vomiting, foodborne diseases can also cause long-term illnesses, such as cancer, liver and kidney failure, brain and nerve disorders. Children may also suffer physical and mental development problems later in life. Dr. Miyagishima says some regions of the world are hit harder than others.
African region carries the highest burden of foodborne diseases per population. According to our estimate, some 91 million people living in African region fall ill each year, which is about 1/7 of total illnesses we estimate to occur in the world.
Around 137,000 people die each year in Africa from foodborne diseases. That's about 1/3 of the global death toll. The Southeast Asia region carries the second highest burden of foodborne diseases per population. Solving the problem requires what the WHO official calls a unified, multi-sectoral approach. That's because the food chain could be thousands of kilometers long and cross many countries.
Only one country cannot ensure the safety of food supply. We need inter-country collaboration so that we can address the whole range of food chain from production to consumption. And secondly, food safety quite often spreads across different government entities. In certain countries, more than 10 ministries are involved in food.
The WHO report says there is a significant need for education and training to prevent foodborne diseases among food producers, suppliers, handlers, and the general public. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
3 years of conflict has split the Central African Republic along religious lines. But at a bakery in one of the most dangerous neighborhoods in the capital, Muslims and Christians are working side by side. Chris Stein has the story from Bangui.
After years of sectarian violence, it is uncommon to find Muslims and Christians working or living together in Bangui. But at Rahama Tir Abdullahi's bakery in the PK5 neighborhood, 15 Christian and Muslim bakers work every day to bring the city fresh bread. The owner, Abdullahi, is a Muslim, but he says as a Central African, he is not going to employ foreigners. There were Christians in need of jobs, he says, so that is who he hired. The trouble in the CAR began early in 2013, when the mostly Muslim Seleka rebel coalition overthrew the government. Militias rose up in December of that year and chased the Seleka from power. The pillaging devolved into intercommunal violence. Seleka's brief reign had been marked by abuses and pillage. Mostly Christian militia groups and mobs took revenge on Muslim civilians. Like many others, Abdullahi lost his home and shop. He fled to Chad, but returned. He is now among the few thousand Muslims still holding out in PK5. PK5 used to be a vibrant market area with 5 bakeries. Now only 2 are operating. Christian anti-Balaka militia besieged the neighborhood, waiting at the entrances with weapons. Coming to work is risky for employees like Fred Yokosa. Yokosa says if he were to run into the anti-Balaka militiamen on his way into PK5, they would beat him, stone him, or kill him. But Yokosa, a Christian, says he has no problem working alongside his Muslim boss. Yokosa says he is earning money and he trusts his boss, so why would he have any problems? But he acknowledges that as a Muslim, Abdullahi lives in danger. Even Yokosa has to hide in the bakery when fighting breaks out in PK5, as it sometimes does. Pope Francis recently visited PK5 and called for reconciliation between Muslims and Christians. The day after he left, a Muslim was killed just outside the neighborhood. Chris Stein for VOA News, Bangui.
At the UN Climate Change Conference outside Paris, participants can make up for the greenhouse gases they produced in getting there by giving money to a power plant in Chile. It may sound strange, but it is part of a UN-backed system aimed at helping developing countries reduce their greenhouse gas emissions. VOA's Steve Barragona has more.
Conference organizers have worked hard to reduce the carbon footprint of the event. Recycled wood is everywhere. Hybrid buses shuttle participants around. But 40,000 people have descended on Paris for the meeting. Most of them flew, burning fossil fuels that create carbon dioxide, notes UN Climate Change Secretariat sustainability expert Nicholas Svenningsen.
It would be ironic if you have a climate conference to reduce emissions, and what you actually do is that you increase them.
So meeting-goers are encouraged to log on to climateneutralnow.org. There's a calculator to compute an individual's share of the carbon dioxide produced by their plane ride. The next step? Go shopping for offsets. The system is based on a controversial concept. The idea is that someone who puts greenhouse gases into the atmosphere can pay someone somewhere else to take them out or not to produce them. The most familiar version is planting trees to soak up carbon dioxide. Climate Neutral Now shoppers can choose from that one and more, Svenningsen says.
You have everything from efficient lighting, sustainable transport, renewable energy, industrial technology efficiency, methane recovery from waste.
For example, Svenningsen says the Nueva Alda biomass power plant in Chile would not have been built without carbon offset funds.
This could, for example, be a coal-fired plant instead. So the difference is that I actually have a clean energy plant instead of a fossil fuel plant.
So choose a project, put a couple tons of CO2 offsets in your shopping cart, check out with a credit card or PayPal, and your greenhouse gas emissions are canceled out. Offsetting a round-trip flight from Washington only costs $3.50. But critics say it's hard to calculate exactly whether these offset programs really do what they advertise. The field has seen problems with sketchy accounting. Opponents say UN funds sometimes go to heavily polluting industries, and some projects have done more harm than good, like tree plantations that displaced local people. But the Center for Climate and Energy Solutions Vice President Janet Peace says the United Nations is learning from its mistakes.
And then over time, we realize that you actually do have to do more, and you have to do more of this, and you have to really make sure you're not doing that. And then you got to have somebody actually check.
She says UN offset programs are now among the best available. But others compare buying carbon offsets to priests who sold indulgences. For a fee, your sins were forgiven. The critics consider carbon offsets a distraction from what they say should be the real aim, curtailing polluters' emissions. Imperial College lecturer Niall McDowell looks at the analogy differently.
So if you could actually commit a sin and then buy an indulgence and wipe it out, that does just get you back to zero, right? So isn't that okay?
Svenningsen adds that carbon offsets should be a last resort after polluters have done what they can to pollute less. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Paris.
When news breaks, VOA News is there.
VOA.
Around the clock, listen to VOA newscasts on the top of each hour, along with our detailed news shows and analysis.
VOA News. We're online at voanews.com.
At voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.
This is African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Here is a brief recap of our top stories this hour. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has called today for urgent humanitarian aid to countries in West Africa that have fallen victim to Boko Haram attacks. South Africa's top appeals court has overturned a lesser judgment and convicted superstar athlete Oscar Pistorius of murder. And a top leader of the U.S. Africa Command tells VOA Islamic State militants have expanded their reach in Africa. Coming up, music from Sierra Leone. And in our feature segment, Zimbabwe joins the rest of the world in launching activism against gender-based violence. I'm Hayes Wuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. Time now for the sunny side of sports with Sonny Young. Hello, Sonny.
Hello, Yeheus.
I understand you're kicking off with African football.
Yeheus, Uganda will go against Rwanda in Saturday's final at the CECAFA Senior Challenge Cup football tournament in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Both teams won their semifinal matches Thursday on penalty kicks after goalless draws during regulation. The Ugandans dashed the hopes of the local fans in Addis by beating host Ethiopia 5-3 on penalty kicks. Uganda's Farouk Mia, the 18-year-old captain and emerging African star, converted the final spot kick for the Cranes of Uganda. Our African football guru, David Legg, says Mia is definitely a player to watch in the coming years. And in the other semifinal, Rwanda beat Sudan 4-2 on penalty kicks. Speaking after the match, Johnny McKinstry, Rwanda's 30-year-old head coach from Northern Ireland, said, and I quote, "My young team has done the country proud by reaching the final." Coach McKinstry and the Amavubi, or Wasps of Rwanda, well, they're using the CECAFA tournament to prepare for the 2016 African Nations Championship, or CHAN, which Rwanda will host next month. In Saturday's final, the Rwandans will play a Ugandan squad that's chasing a record-extending 14th CECAFA Senior Challenge Cup trophy. The regional tournament, organized by the Council for East and Central Africa Football Associations, is the oldest football competition in Africa. It originally kicked off in the 1920s when it was known as the Gossage Cup.
Hi, I'm Segun Adeyemi, coming to you all the way from Lagos, Nigeria. Weekends are for sports. Nightline Africa Sports, that is. And every Sunday, I'll give you highlights of the top sports stories of the past week and the weekend. Nightline Africa Sports from the Voice of America. Let the games begin.
We got the game.
Elephants of Ivory Coast will end 2015 as Africa's top-ranked football team in rankings released Thursday by FIFA, World Football's governing body. The Elephants are 19th overall and first in Africa. The Desert Foxes of Algeria are next at 28, followed by the Black Stars of Ghana at 33. The Blue Sharks of the Cape Verde Islands are next at 39th overall, followed by the Carthage Eagles of Tunisia at number 40. Rounding out the top 10 teams in Africa to end 2015, according to FIFA, we have Senegal at 44, Congo-Brazzaville at 48, Guinea at 50, Egypt at 57, and Cameroon at 59. Meanwhile, the best and worst movers in the December FIFA rankings are both from Africa. Libya was the best, jumping 32 places from November to number 81 overall, which puts the Libyans at number 21 in Africa. And Liberia was the worst, falling 21 places from November to number 107 overall. That places the Liberians 29th in Africa. Taking a look at the very top of the FIFA rankings, Belgium ends 2015 as world football's top-ranked team. Argentina, Spain, Germany, and Chile round out the top five. The United States ends the year at number 32 overall, just ahead of the Black Stars of Ghana. Our VOA World Cup fans will remember the USA and Ghana met in the group phase at last year's big tournament in Brazil. The Americans defeated the Ghanaians 2-1 in Natal, getting a game-winning goal in the 86th minute from defender John Brooks. Well, this year marked the 50th anniversary of the All-Africa Games, and the multi-sports competition returned to the place that first staged the sporty jamboree, Congo-Brazzaville. When the games ended on September 19th, Egypt was on top of the medals table. The Egyptians dominated the podium, winning 217 medals, 73 more than second-place Nigeria. Zimbabwe won 4 medals in Brazzaville, 3 gold and 1 bronze, and all of them were placed around the neck of swimming star Kirsty Coventry. Since first diving in the pool in Algiers in 2007, the 32-year-old Coventry has posted a spectacular All-Africa Games record, a total of 22 medals won, including 14 gold. In this sunny side of sports highlight for 2015, let's listen in again to an interview Kirsty did with reporter Blessing Zulu about her performance in Brazzaville.
It's been an honor to represent Zimbabwe at the All-Africa Games, and I was just very thankful that I was able to go there and do as well as I did.
Tell us, how do you prepare for such events?
We had prepared for the World Championship, and I had done some good times. So I knew coming into this that I'd be a little bit weaker because it's a little bit harder to stay so focused strength-wise for 3 weeks later. But we just did a good job of training and getting back into the pool as soon as we could. And, you know, I think I was also just really excited. This is my last All Africa game, so it gave me the opportunity to not leave any energy outside of the pool. Everything was put into that every race.
So you cannot be convinced to try
no,
and go?
I don't think so. I think, you know, I've said all along that Rio Olympics will be my last big international competition. And it was very sad. It did take me a little bit by surprise how emotional I got saying goodbye to the team, being on the podium for the last time in Africa. It's always been such a big part of my career.
Let's turn to Rio 2016 at the 2004 Summer Olympics in Athens, Greece. You won 3 Olympic medals. And in 2008 at the Summer Olympic Games in Beijing, you won 4 medals. Are we going to see another repeat this time in Rio?
You know, that's always the goal. The goal is to always, you know, try to get onto the podium. You know, unfortunately, in London 2012, I dislocated my knee 4 months before and then got pneumonia 2 months before. I still managed to come sixth, but it was just short of my goal. And so I felt that I wanted to give it one more chance. It is going to be challenging. There are a lot of very good swimmers swimming at the moment, especially in my event. So I'm looking forward to the challenge in the year ahead.
You have also been working with schools in Zimbabwe to promote swimming. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so I've set up a Kirsty Coventry Academy, and right now we're working with a school, Mother's Touch, and we've coached some teachers to become swimming coaches, and there's about 450 children going through the program, which we're very excited about.
Are we likely to see another Kirsty very soon?
I hope so. You know, there are a lot of young swimmers coming up. You know, the talent is there, and now we just need the support and the funding to make sure that we continue to support our athletes.
Lastly, I know you insist that you don't only represent Zimbabwe, but Africa. What is your message to your fans?
Just thank you so much. You know, I've really been so lucky to have so many amazing fans, not just in Africa, but around the world, and Zimbabweans that are everywhere. You know, through sport, I've managed to keep us all linked together. And I think that's something that's really amazing that sport does. And just, you know, thank you so much for your support over the years.
That's Zimbabwean swimming star Kirsty Coventry. Kirsty won 4 medals, 3 of them gold, at the All-Africa Games in Congo, Brazzaville. And she was talking with reporter Blessing Zulu during a brief stop here in Washington. In National Basketball Association news, Los Angeles Lakers superstar Kobe Bryant might be in his farewell season, but Kobe is showing he can still make a big difference on the court. Here in Washington Wednesday night, Kobe fired in a season-high 31 points to lead the Lakers to a 108-104 victory over my beloved Washington Wizards. Kobe saved his best for last, scoring 12 points in the fourth quarter to sink the Wizards. In the words of Wizards coach Randy Whitman, he decided to be young Kobe tonight. Hats off to him. The Hats will be coming off a lot this season for 37-year-old Kobe Bryant, who announced earlier this week he'll be retiring after this, his 20th NBA season. Kobe is the only guard in NBA history to play 20 seasons in the league. Elsewhere around the NBA, the defending NBA champion Golden State Warriors extended their record streak to start the season with their 20th consecutive victory. The Warriors beat the host Charlotte Hornets 116-99. Another star guard, Stephen Curry, the league most valuable player last season, fired in 40 points for those red-hot Warriors. I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Back to Yeheus Wuhi.
Thank you, Sonny, and listen to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Friday, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the sunny side of sports at 1730 UTC right here on The Voice of America. Coming up, Zimbabwe joins the rest of the world in launching activism against gender-based violence. And next, rising sea levels caused by global warming endanger coastal communities in Senegal. But first, some music. Here is Lady Felicia from Sierra Leone with African music. Lady Felicia from Sierra Leone with African music. Zimbabwe has joined the rest of the world in launching 2 weeks of activism against gender-based violence. Evidence shows that women and girls living with disabilities are the most vulnerable. On the other hand, rural girls say they are forced into early marriages by their struggling families. Many have dropped out of school as their parents cannot afford basics such as sanitary pads. Arthur Chigorwi reports from Lion's Den in Mashonaland West.
Around the world, 246 million children experience gender-based violence at or on their way to school every year, according to a report by the United Nations Human Rights Council. Activists say gender-based violence in schools and at home is happening in every country in the world right now. And as Zimbabwe joins the rest of the world marking the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence campaign, young rural girls say there's another problem stopping them from going to school, the shortage of sanitary wear that they want to be addressed as a matter of urgency. At a recent event to commemorate the girl child at Lion's Den in Mashonaland West, Pamoacha, a group looking into issues affecting the girl child, called on girls to start using homemade reusable sanitary pads to avert their problem. The mostly rural girls who attended the event welcomed the introduction of reusable pads that they said are cost-effective. Rosalind Mamvura of Alaska says she now uses the reusable pads that save money and are hygienic.
Mwacha organization, it does a lot of activities so as to empower a girl child. They do train Vanaskana about the sanitary way, whereas girls are being trained to make reusable pads, which go for a 1 year. Whereas you find that sometimes Vanaskana, we find my difficulties in buying my pads every month.
Jeline Maponga from Murereka District in the province praised girl child programs, saying they are empowering young girls to fight off gender-based violence, adding they also enlighten them about their rights.
In terms of empowering them to know that in the society they are being recognized, as compared in the past years, the girls were not even heard. Like me personally, I'm an ample testimony of this girl child empowerment. I was an orphan and I couldn't stand in front of people. But with the coming up of the girl child empowerment, Shandibatsira to build confidence and to know that I can make something. She truly tangible and she not appreciate what I'm doing.
Pamoasha director Precious Nyamukondiwa said the organization decided to start producing reusable sanitary pads after realizing that most girls were using unhygienic materials like newspaper for their menstruation periods, with some being forced into illicit relationships to access such basic things.
Period of menstruation day is a very traumatic time moment for most girls because they don't even have anything to use. So I still teach them, can I make a dollar? They couldn't have no Tenga M shop. Why don't you make your own washable sanitary pad? And it's so hygienic, they wash it and they line it up out in the sun so that they can reuse it from time to time.
Emma called a policewoman who did not want to be named because she is not authorized to speak with the media, said there is an absence of cases of child abuse, gender-based violence, rape of juveniles, and the early marriages of the girl child. Problems, she said, could be tied to poverty currently affecting many families in the country. Various organizations working with women and the girls who attended the commemorations said they will be advocating for stiffer sentences for rapists and perpetrators of gender violence during the 16 days of activism, which starts today. The 16 days of activism is a time to galvanize the action to end violence against women and girls around the world, they said. The 16 days campaign begins on the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, November 25, and ends on the International Human Rights Day, December 10, and emphasizes that gender-based violence in its many forms is a human rights violation. Reporting for Studio 7 in Lion's Den, Mashonaland West, this is Arthur Chigorwi.
Senegal's Saloum Delta region is an example of how rising sea levels caused by global warming endanger coastal communities around the world. Zlatika Hoek reports on the damage being caused by sea salt on the Senegalese islands.
Mangrove forests are essential to Senegalese coastal ecosystems. They are protecting swampy areas from erosion, storm surges, and tsunamis. They shield crop fields and help boost fish stocks. But as the sea waters rise, the mangroves get too much salt and perish. Droughts and erratic rainfalls that cause floods have increased salt levels and poisoned freshwater sources, land, and agriculture.
3 or 4 days after the rain, everything goes white. There are piles of salt. All the crops we sow die. All this is due to the salinity caused by the rising waters of the sea. And when we store valuables in our rooms, rust eats away little by little and eventually destroys them.
Residents of the Diamniadio island near the edge of the delta used to grow their own rice and vegetables. Now they have to buy the produce they used to grow. When the community lost its rice crops, it turned to fishing for livelihood. But when the mangroves die, they also erase the breeding grounds for fish.
When the sea enters in the river, because you have increasing of salt, it has killed many mangroves. And you know the mangroves are the nurseries of all the seafood.
Illegal overfishing further depleted fish stocks, leaving many people without a source of livelihood.
No conservation.
No mangrove conservation and land salinization led us to turn to immigration. A decrease of resources is what drives young people here to take canoes to reach the Canary Islands.
Those left behind fear losing their homes to the sea.
When the tide is high, the water goes into the kitchen and then gradually the water enters the rooms. My kitchen was rebuilt last year, but even today it's threatened by the rising waters. The high salinity of the seawater eventually breaks down even the cement. After 3 years, the building collapses.
Local activists have started an effort to replant mangroves and control the use of the shrubs for firewood. They're also working with the communities to set up sand barriers, provide water tanks to collect rainwater, and grow table gardens with soil made from peanut shells and other material. Environmentalists hope the plight of the islands will receive due attention at the Paris Climate Summit. Zlatica Hoek, VOA News, Washington.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at VOA Africa. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kurt Bynum. Thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
On the night of September 11th, 2012, members of the Ansar al-Sharia terrorist group attacked two U.S. government facilities in Benghazi, Libya. Using machine guns, rocket-propelled grenades, and mortars, the militants targeted the U.S. Special Mission compound and a nearby annex in repeated assaults, killing four Americans, including the U.S. ambassador, wounding two more U.S. personnel, and three Libyan contract guards. Both facilities were destroyed. Rewards were offered, and an intensive search mounted for those responsible for the attack. On June 15th, U.S. military personnel arrested a key suspect in the operation, Ahmed Abu Katala, a senior leader of Ansar al-Sharia in Benghazi, has been charged with murder and other charges, and will be sent to the United States to stand trial. Others involved in the attack remain at large, and the United States will do whatever it takes to see that justice is done. Created after the fall of Libya's longtime ruler, Muammar Gaddafi, Ansar al-Sharia has been involved in many attacks in the region, targeting civilians and assassinating or attempting to assassinate security officials and political actors in eastern Libya. Its members continue to pose a threat to U.S. interests in Libya and have been designated as international terrorist organizations. Toward this end, the Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $10 million for information leading to the arrest or conviction of any individual responsible for the Benghazi attacks. The U.S. guarantees that all reports will be investigated and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential. If appropriate, the U.S. is prepared to protect informants by relocating them. If you have information on any of these individuals, contact the Regional Security Office at the nearest U.S. Embassy or the tip line at www.rewardsforjustice.net or email information to info@rewardsforjustice.net.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA News is there. Around the clock, listen to VOA newscasts on the top of each hour, along with our detailed news shows and analysis.
VOA News. We're online at voanews.com.
At voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.